everybody. Good evening, everybody. Hello, hello. Welcome to tonight's program. This hour is sponsored by James Herlihy, who has more bad Mike Malloy haiku. Here it is. Who is live person? Is it Kathy? Is it Mike? Blue pulls a fast one. Okay. All right, James. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. That's about the only levity I think we have in the program tonight. Are you aware that CNN, is running something that they're calling a Republican debate, but as Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting points out, CNN has now aligned itself with this far-right network of neo-fascists. As Fair reports, tonight's Republican debate might look familiar with a well-known journalist, that would be Wolf Blitzer, posing questions to a stage full of candidates, but CNN's event is actually a co-production with the far-right Tea Party Express, which raises serious questions about a journalistic outlet's decision to formally partner with this neo-fascist political group. Good God in heaven! Now, CNN explained it this way. CNN and the Tea Party Express, along with more than 100 local Tea Party groups from every state across the country, will team up Monday, September 12th to present a first-of-its-kind debate from the site of the 2012 Republican National Convention. That'll be Tampa. The CNN statement went on to say, in addition to questions from Wolf Blitzer, audience members inside the debate hall, made up in part by members from Tea Party groups in 31 states and District of Columbia, will be invited to ask questions directly to the candidates. Questions also will be taken live from Tea Party members at debate watch parties in Phoenix, Arizona, Cincinnati, Ohio, and Portsmouth, Virginia. As Fair says, it's kind of unusual for a centrist news outlet like CNN to take an openly partisan group as a partner in producing a political event. Any progressive groups being granted any similar opportunities in recent years? Well, the answer to that is no, but that's because there is no progressive group that owns a television network or a radio network. It's pretty strange. I tuned in this thing. I'm watching this. This is like, and Wolf Blitzer should know better. I mean, he should know better. He really should. But this is like putting on the National Socialists back in the early 30s before the election. I mean, this is in Germany. This is madness. Oh well, it doesn't make any difference because the outcome of the political process has already been predetermined. But the theater is what pisses me off. The theater that's being presented under the guise of a news event or reporting, or not just tonight, but the whole schmear. I mean, the whole thing is kind of ridiculous. Well, ridiculous is kind of a namby-pamby term. It's like what Rick Perry accused Ben Bernanke of, treason. I mean, when you have a national network like CNN, what the hell is Ted Turner doing tonight? When you have a national network like CNN, who partners up with a neo-fascist organization like the Tea Party, and Wolf Blitzer should know better. He should know better. Being Jewish, he's one of the first people who would be put to the knife. Oh, well, nobody cares. I've got to get into this this little dust up here. Donald Rumsfeld canceled his New York Times subscription. I think he did it today. And he did it because on Sunday, Paul Krugman, not in the paper, but on a New York Times blog site where Krugman has his conscience of a liberal blog piece. Under 200 words in what Krugman write, but Rumsfeld, the unindicted war criminal, got his depends in such a wad that he Twittered or he tweeted, whatever the hell I call it, that he was canceling his subscription to the Times because of what Krugman wrote. Krugman, Dave Weigel, writing over at Slate, he points out that while the rest of the New York Times was turned over to 9/11 anniversary writers, Krugman vented his spleen. Years of columns were condensed into a few pithy lines. And this is, let me share with you what Krugman wrote. It's very quick. Under the heading, The Years of Shame, Krugman writes, "Is it just me, or are the 9/11 commemorations oddly subdued? Actually, I don't think it's me. And it's not really that odd. What happened after 9/11, and I think even people on the right know this, whether they admit it or not, what happened was deeply shameful. The atrocity should have been a unifying event, but instead it became a wedge issue. Fake heroes like Bernie Kerik, Rudy Giuliani, and yes, George W. Bush raced to cash in on the horror. And then the attack was used to justify an unrelated war that the neocons wanted to fight for all the wrong reasons. A lot of other people behaved badly. How many of our professional pundits, people who should have understood very well what was happening, how many took the easy way out, turning a blind eye to the corruption and lending their support to the hijacking of the atrocity? The memory of 9/11 has been irrevocably poisoned. It has become an occasion for shame, and in its heart, the nation knows it. And by the way, I'm not going to allow comments on this post for obvious reasons." That's all he wrote. Now, as Robert Perry pointed out at consortium news.com, while Krugman is writing this, Bill Keller, the former editor of the New York Times, is writing his slobbery ass piece. Where, while, or not Bill, not Kellerman, who am I? Bill, oh damn it, what am I? Who am I? Who is it, Kathy? Who is the editor of Bill? Let's just call him Bill. I'm just drawing a blank on his name. He was writing his slobbery piece for the New York Times, or he wrote it for the New York Times, about how he very much supported the invasion of Afghanistan and Iraq, and now he realizes that it was the wrong thing to do. And in the entire piece that he wrote, there's not a mention of the war crimes that were committed, the violations of UN treaties, the violations of judicial decisions made at Nuremberg, every criminal act that Bush and Cheney committed. Bill Keller, and the New York Times egged them on, supported them. So did the Washington Post. So did just about every goddamn newspaper in America. Nice, huh? So Krugman, in his 181-word blog, is challenging the support that his own newspaper gave. And don't even get me started on Judith Miller. That his own newspaper gave in support of international crime, criminal activity. What the U.S. established at Nuremberg was the most horrendous international crime that could be committed. It was so bad, as Justice Jackson said, it was so bad, it incorporated every single evil that could be committed on the international scene into one. And that is the unprovoked invasion of another country. And we don't care in this country. We don't give a goddamn. We have a bunch of clowns on the stage in Tampa tonight with this former Mossad operative, Wolf Blitzer, questioning Tea Party people about how they want to destroy America. It's just, this is getting sicker by the day, folks. Can I turn if I try? Should I trade my soul for another? Learn not to complain anymore. Should I stay and pretend? Thank you.
go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Let me digress just a moment here because during the break I was watching this this horror show on CNN where CNN has now abrogated any sense of that it's a journalistic enterprise. It is not. It is now a co-producer of propaganda with this Tea Party neo-fascist organization. But the question that Wolf Blitzer proposed to these people, since every single person on the stage wants to do away with any kind of government health care, whether it's Medicare or Medicaid or what have you, the private sector's got to take care of everything, you see. Blitzer posed the question, what happens if you have, say, a 30-year-old man who makes a nice living, but, you know, he's young, he figures he's not going to be sick, so he opts out of buying any health insurance, and then something unexpected happens, he winds up in a coma. Who is going to provide the money to take care of now the enormous cost that's going to have, that's going to accumulate to keep this guy alive? And one of the clowns on stage said something, and Blitzer said, well, would you let him die? And the audience said yes! They're yelling! Just like they yelled in approval when Rick Perry talked about the hundreds of people he sent to the death chamber, whether they're guilty or not. This goddamn country is getting sicker by the day. Let him die. I wonder how many of the filthy bastards in that audience. Get a grip, Malloy. This is nothing that a person of average intelligence shouldn't already know. Fascism is coming. It's almost here. You know Obama's going to be a one-term president. You know this. Unless he gets a challenge from the left, somebody who can organize the base of the Democratic Party and defeat these proto-fascists, but you know it's coming. I know it's coming. So why get upset about it? Dave Weigel again at Slate. He said on a day when everyone else was flashing back to 9/11/2001, Weigel was flashing back to the days and months later when criticism of the Bush administration returned and the practitioners of that criticism became, if only briefly, Emmanuel Goldstein's. Remember that? Remember Susan Sontag? Remember the Dixie Chicks? Remember the effort to take Michael Moore's Oscar away from him because these people had the temerity? Of course, they're national figures. Some of us down here in the swamps were criticizing it from day one, but we don't get that kind of notice. The people who did get the notice, they're almost declared un-American, remember? And as Weigel points out, there hasn't been much criticism of the substance of Krugman's remarks, which is denying that 9/11 and counterterrorism strategy became wedge issues. If you deny that, you're going to have to deny a few years of political history. The criticism of Krugman is for expressing it. And he brushes that off. Krugman says, quote, I'm not saying anything in that post that I wasn't saying back in 2002 when people like him, referring to Rumsfeld, were riding high. And isn't Rumsfeld's sweep everything up related or not? The poster child for 9/11 exploitation, remember that? Here's the quote. When Rumsfeld, within hours, where is it? Oh, yeah, CBS News reported this a couple of years ago. Barely 5 hours after American Airlines Flight 77 plowed into the Pentagon, Defense Secretary Rumsfeld is telling his aides to come up with plans for striking Iraq, even though there was no evidence. It goes on. Rumsfeld said, go massive. Sweep it all up. Things related and not. Now, if that isn't... I mean, if that isn't grounds for putting him in the same dock as Joseph Goebbels, as Heinrich Himmler, as the Hugo Boss organization that designed the Nazi uniforms, if that's not equal to the war crimes committed by the Germans, what the hell is it? Well, of course it's equal to. Some might say it even supersedes. And what are we doing about it in this country? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. When are we going to do something about it? Never. You know it, and I know it. And this clown show, this murder clown show going on CNN right now, what do you call that? You call that a complete capitulation by the only profession in the country protected by the United States Constitution. The complete capitulation. And who's it being led by? Of course, Wolf Blitzer. Who do you think? More when we come back after this break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Nothing left for me to figure out. I paid a price, and I'll keep paying. I'm not ready to make it nice. I'm not ready to back down. I'm still mad as hell, and I don't have time to go around and round and round. It's too late.
The Mike Malloy Show, all substance, no abuse.
25 before the hour. It's just, it's very jarring for me, maybe it is for you sometimes, to know that tonight in Tampa, the eight clowns who would bring fascism to this country in a rush are on a stage being given full attention by Wolf Blitzer and the CNN television network. While CNN might be better served to explain to the American public the treason that was committed here, the war crimes that the United States is now known for, we are forever identified with the actions that George W. Bush and Dick Cheney took subsequent to the attack of September 11th. There's no getting around that. I mean, for the rest of the world, they know who we are. They know what we are. And for the Americans who don't give a goddamn about that, then how dare you? You know, just like I shared with you, I think it was last week. If what Bush and Cheney did and their cohort did regarding Iraq, especially Iraq, if that's allowed to stand with no consequences, then what happened at Nuremberg when we hanged members of the German high command was nothing more than judicial murder. Do you understand that? As Justice Jackson said, what we are doing here today, referring to the Constitution of the war crimes trials, what we're doing here is establishing law, not just for the German high command, but for the American high command, for any high command. So if Bush and Cheney and the rest of these killers, war criminals, walk, and they will, then what happened in Germany at the Nuremberg trials, after the trials, when we hanged members of the high command, that was judicial murder. What happened to the Japanese high command when we executed them was murder. Period. Do you understand that? Can you live with that? Can you live with that? I mean, to a lot of people, that's hog squat. Who cares, right? Who cares? It doesn't make any difference. I got to find a job. It doesn't make any difference. I'm going to vote for Rick Perry because I'm sick of Obamacare and I don't like the color guy anyway. I mean, does anybody get the overarching reality that we're dealing with here? I don't think so. I mean, you do. I know you do. But, and I do. But Chris Hedges, I don't quote him so much anymore because, you know, he refers to people like me, a full-blown atheist, as some kind of a sicko. But, okay, that's right. I mean, people a lot a lot smarter, believe it or not, than Chris Hedges have referred to atheists that way. But let me just quote what he said here. A decade after 9/11, we are what we loathe. Just a paragraph. He writes, what was played out in the weeks after the attacks was the old familiar battle between force and human imagination, between the crude instruments of violence and the capacity for empathy and understanding. Human imagination lost. Cold-blooded reason, which does not speak the language of the imagination, won. We began to speak and think in the empty, mindless, nationalist cliches about terror that the state handed to us. We became what we abhorred. The deaths of 9/11, were used to justify preemptive war, invasion, shock and awe, prolonged occupation, targeted assassinations, torture, offshore penal colonies, gunning down families at checkpoints, massive aerial bombardments, drone attacks, missile strikes, and the killing of dozens, and soon hundreds, and then thousands, and later tens of thousands, and finally hundreds of thousands of innocent people. We produced piles of corpses in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Pakistan, and extended the reach of our killing machine to Yemen and Somalia. And by beatifying our dead, by cementing into the national psyche fear and the imperative of permanent war, and by stoking our collective humiliation, the state carried out crimes, atrocities, and killings that dwarfed anything carried out against us on 9/11. Wow. And Donald Rumsfeld had the audacity to cancel his subscription to the New York Times because Krugman said something similar to that in much milder terms. Let me say again, this message, this hour is sponsored by James Herlihy. His message is in the form of another bad Mike Malloy haiku. Who is live person? Is it Kathy? Is it Mike? Blue pulls the fast one. I guess you're referring to, when was that, last Friday? The person from Alabama. Joe in Temecula, California, staying in the same general vein here. As a result, Joe writes, as a result of 9/11, millions of Iraqis have died along with tens of thousands of Afghans. They died so that the American people could feel some sort of sense of revenge by killing as many brown Muslim people as the world would allow. Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11. Bush and Cheney completely lied us into that multi-trillion dollar boondoggle with the net result being a quadrupling of Halliburton stock. The argument could be made that since Al-Qaeda was in Afghanistan, we had some sort of authority to go in there and take out Al-Qaeda, but we didn't do that. Bush let bin Laden go, and we instead turned Afghanistan upside down and inside out in the name of corporate profit. So will we ever build a memorial at ground zero to the millions of people who have died to make us feel better? Will we ever build a memorial for those we tortured and detained unlawfully? Will we ever as a nation admit we did something horrible to Iraq and Afghanistan? Probably not. As usual, it's all about us and not the other people. I suppose the memorial to Iraq and Afghanistan will remain right next to the memorial we built to remember the 3 million Vietnamese we killed in order to keep capitalism safe from communism. Oh, wait, there is no such memorial. Joe in Temecula, California. It's just madness, I swear to God. Jeremy writes, as far as I've been told by many of my friends who are or were in the military and had been to Iraq, Iraq was a blanking free fire zone. No war before that or after it had been a free fire zone where troops were actively encouraged to kill anything that moved. There was a major issue. That was a major issue for troops that were sent to Afghanistan. They were no longer in that free fire environment. Many troops don't talk about the horror they saw specifically in Iraq due to that very free fire zone. It's pretty incredible. CNN, one of the co-conspirators in Cheney and Bush's violation of just about every law that you can think of that identifies them as full-blown Nazi high command level war criminals themselves. CNN is partnered with the Teabag Express, a neo-fascist organization that wants to thoroughly, and the reason I say it's a neo-fascist organization is totally funded, totally run by people like the Koch brothers. So what you're seeing tonight are the candidates of the Koch brothers being paraded on stage by CNN in a joint production, the Koch brothers, for Christ's sake. It's come to this. It's come to this. And if there's anything that the Koch brothers are, they're just like the German industrialists in World War II, who were perfect capitalists. That means they were perfect fascists. They had no problem putting Poles and Jews and Hungarians and Italians and Slavs and Czechs and anybody that they could get their hands on to work in their factories, their slave factories. The Hugo Boss organization was just thrilled to design the Nazi uniforms that to this day are just so cool, aren't they? Huh? The greatest uniforms, the slickest uniforms ever invented by Hugo Boss. And you can pick up the New York Times tomorrow morning and see an ad by Hugo Boss. Go buy their clothing. just unbelievable. Just unbelievable. A U.S. State Embassy, a State Department embassy cable marked confidential. This is from FireDogLeg.com and published by WikiLeaks, reveals details of the detention of juveniles held in something called Site 4 in the Iraq Interior Ministry detention complex. The juveniles alleged sexual abuse by Iraqi interrogators, specifically that rapes were being used in the prison to induce confessions. The discovery of widespread abuse and torture, according to the diplomat who wrote the cable, is the worst since the infamous Jadria bunker facility was discovered in 2005. I don't know what that is. On May 30th, 2006, a joint U.S.-Iraqi inspection of the detention facility took place. The facility, located in central Baghdad, was found to have 1,400 detainees. They were in two separate facilities and held in squalid, cramped conditions not uncommon in Ministry of Interior Commando detention facilities. Inspectors interviewed 41 detainees who had bruising and lash marks consistent with violent physical abuse, and 37 juveniles who had been illegally detained were found in the facility, many alleging sexual abuse. The cable sent out June 10th, 2006, reports a number of juvenile detainees, mostly young teenagers, alleged sexual abuse at the hands of the Ministry of Interior personnel, specifically that those interrogators had used threats and acts of anal rape to induce confessions and had forced juveniles to fellate them during interrogations. These allegations were also raised independently with inspectors by adult detainees who claimed knowledge of juvenile rapes. This is what we did. I am perfectly comfortable fighting the world. If you're perfectly comfortable with all that's been done, gaze at your daughters and gaze at your sons. Ask yourself this question over again. Would you be perfectly happy if it happened to them? If you're perfectly comfortable, yearning, burning inside. Before the hour, this hour is sponsored by James Herlihy, who has another bad Mike Malloy haiku. Who is live person? Is it Kathy? Is it Mike? Blue pulls a fast one. Thank you, James. Not for the haiku, but for the sponsorship. Oy, 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 oy. You know, watching some of the audience members on CNN. As CNN destroys forever whatever little remnant of mythology left that they were news gathering information, or an organization that was centrist in its point of view. The audience members, I've never seen a collection of people like this. It's, of course, it is Tampa, but some of these people have come from outside the Tampa Bay area. But as the camera pans across this crowd, the audience is about 95% white. I think there are a few people of color there that maybe thought they were going to a, you know, an Avon convention or something and drifted in the front door. It's mostly white people, mostly a middle age or older, and mostly well-dressed and well-fed, who are sitting there listening to Wolf Blitzer and CNN participate in providing candidates who would literally absolutely destroy America. It's just unbelievable. And to hear them go after Obama, they're not going after Obama on the issues that he should be going after, the issues that we bring up on this program on a regular basis. You know, his continuation of Bush policies, whether they're foreign policy or tax policy or drone attacks against innocent civilians in Pakistan or Afghanistan. That's not what they bring up. What they bring up is Obama's feeble attempt to provide health care for people, which is really a payoff to the health insurance industry. They're going after him because they know that their constituency hates Negroes, just hates black people, hates them on a visceral gut level, hates them. And in private conversations, uses the N-word whenever they feel like it. And every one of these Republicans on stage understand that. They know it. So they don't go after Obama on the issues that he should be held accountable for. No, 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 no. And Rick Perry, this slimy son of a bitch, referred to it tonight as Obama's depression. Or was it Perry? I think it was Perry. As if Obama did this. Obama has done nothing, absolutely nothing domestically, good or bad, except be just a wimp. A person unable to lead desperately when we need a Roosevelt, we wind up with Barack Obama, for God's sake. So the issues that they could be going after him, the issues that are fascistic in their nature, the issues that are murderous and illegal and outside international law and bordering on treason and traitors, you know, they label Paul Bernanke as being committing a treasonous act because Bernanke might do what the Fed has done ever since there's been a Fed. Print money! It's astonishing. So while this charade, this parade of clowns, this I don't know, man, it's just really unnerving me. While this is going on, you know, the horrific truths about where this country has gone now and how we are labeled by the rest of the world. And by the rest of the world, I mean everybody. It doesn't make any difference. The UK, Canada, Mexico, even a narco state like Mexico, they know what's going on up here. South America, they want as little to do with us as possible. The African states, they understand. The Middle East, China is just biding its time. India, no more respect for the United States, not that we deserve any. The whole world understands this. So how does the United States act as we have in so many decades, the international scold, when a country violates another country's sovereignty or national border or commits an act of internal violence? How do we condemn Syria's Assad? He's murdering his own people. The United States decided under Bush to murder hundreds of thousands of innocent civilians. Just butcher them! My God. How do we do this? How do we keep doing this? I don't know. I don't know. We have a break coming up. If I'm not here when you come back, it'll be a recorded hour. I don't know. I'm just freaking out here. I really am. When you have a group like that includes people like Bachman and Perry and Kane and Santorum and those people up on the stage at a teabag CNN co-production of how the best, the quickest, the greasiest way to destroy the country. It just speaks volumes about where we are. And not only is Blitzer there, but John, what's his name? John, the CNN anchor, John King is there. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if 360 Man is there. What's his name? Anderson Cooper, right? It's a total capitulation, man. It is a total capitulation. Oh, my God. All right. I guess it really doesn't matter a whole lot in the big scheme of things. We have known where this country is heading. We're just about there. Stick around. I'll be back. Sponsored by Alice at Healing Hollers. Hallelujah. Healing Hollers supports the postal system because they have delivered all our packages for over 10 years flawlessly. Alice writes, I cannot imagine my life and business without my local post office. Healing Hollers. They have, or she has an ad on our website, MikeMalloy.com. And if you go there, click on it, right, Kathy? It'll take you to her website. She's got some products that you should have. Healing Hollers. I like that. Healing Hollers supports the postal system because they have delivered all our packages for over 10 years flawlessly. I cannot imagine my life and business without my local post office. Alice at Healing Hollers. Amen. Hallelujah. Thank you, Alice. Reg sent this to me during the break regarding acknowledging guilt. Reg writes, even the Germans acknowledge their guilt. In 2000, German President Johann Rau, or in 2000, German President Johann Rau apologized for the Holocaust, during which 6 million Jews perished, saying it is important to teach the younger generation about the past. Rau said while addressing the Israeli Knesset, the Israeli parliament, quote, I'm asking for forgiveness for what Germans have done for myself and my generation, for the sake of our children and grandchildren, whose future I would like to see alongside the children of Israel, end quote. 10 years earlier, East Germany apologized to Israel and all Jews for the Nazi Holocaust and accepted joint responsibility for the slaughter of 6 million Jews during World War II. But Americans? On the other hand, we are apologists if we dare to admit that any horrors were committed in our name. You see, we can do no wrong. Only American lives have value. Others are collateral damage if we recognize their deaths at all. God blesses America, apparently, and no one else. Now, all eight of the people on that stage tonight in Tampa, brought to you by CNN and the Teabaggers. All eight of them would hear any sort of acknowledgement of responsibility or culpability in what happened in Iraq, for example, as a comment by someone who hates America. Why do you hate America, Malloy? From Prairie 2, cashing Mr. Ponzi's check, he says, all right. Rick Perry has come up with some numbers to authenticate his claim that Social Security is a Ponzi scheme. And they are real numbers. Rick Perry is in a guest op-ed in USA Today, writes, quote, by 2037, retirees will only get roughly 76 cents back for every dollar that is put into Social Security unless reforms are implemented. Imagine how long a traditional retirement or investment plan could survive if the projected investors would lose 24% of their money, end quote. Prairie 2 writes, well, yes, those are truthful numbers, sort of. If nothing changes to improve revenues, then by 2037, beneficiaries, not taxpayers, beneficiaries will only get 76 cents instead of a dollar in benefits. This will continue if nothing is done or the economy doesn't change in any way until all the baby boomers start to die off. And then benefits will start to increase again until they reach 100%. In, I would guess, around 2057, give or take a few years, if nothing is done and the economy doesn't change. So when they talk of hundreds of trillions in unfunded obligations, they are just lying. Let me repeat that, Prairie 2 writes. They are just lying. Period. The fact is, the average taxpayer who pays FICA will get 97 cents on the dollar as 3 cents goes for administration. Some will get much more. Those who die early get nothing. Fully one-third of recipients are widows, orphans, and the disabled. All of these must have either paid in themselves to be eligible, or their parents, if orphans, or their spouse, if a widow. Most of this category of recipients will pay into the system in the future, having avoided dying in an orphanage sweatshop or the brothel for widows. As for the disabled, in Rick Perry's world, they would be taken care of by angels. Just an aside, faith-based groups who help the poor get two-thirds of their money from the feds. Republicans would privatize the Social Security system, or in other words, funnel it into Wall Street, taking 40% for themselves, like they do with health care. They would enhance profits with sweatshop orphanages, brothels, and the disabled better getting good with an angel. The 401k, as birthed from the hellmouth by Ronald Reagan, was supposed to make the demise of Social Security happen, as workers would be so enthralled with capitalism that they would demand the privatization of Social Security. In 2005, George Bush pushed this plan with predictions of a 20,000 Dow, and the Wall Street Journal was talking that a 35,000 Dow was to be expected by 2020 with the reality of the sunrise. We now have an 11,000 Dow, and my view is that we will see a 1,500 Dow in the near future. The reality is that 401ks cannot pay off at their current so-called value. This is why they don't let you cash out your 401k. You must wait until far into the future. This, then, is the real Ponzi scheme. The money isn't there. All money paid in comes from new money, or all money paid out comes from new money coming in. The real Mr. Ponzi, that would be Wall Street, is taking all the money for himself, except for those who get paid early to make the scheme seem valid. The occasional crash, blame it on the poor who bought houses they couldn't afford. The occasional crash resets the expectations of those who continue to pay in. Rick Perry may be so stupid that he doesn't have a clue how this really works, but he doesn't care anyway. He knows that if the money goes to Social Security, then he doesn't get the big bribes from Wall Street bankers. So he knows what he thinks about it. He'll repeat the talking points and cash Mr. Ponzi's check. PrayNumeral2.com. Oh, Mississippi is going to have on their ballot November 8th, which is about a month, a ballot measure that defines personhood as beginning at the moment of fertilization. And the Mississippi Supreme Court ruled last week that that can be on the ballot. Now, the measure will outlaw abortions. It will outlaw birth control. It will outlaw in vitro fertilization. And it will outlaw stem cell research across the state. It's Measure 26. And it will bypass the legislature and go straight to a popular ballot vote. You hear the sound of the wind whistling by your head? That's the noise it makes when you go backwards at about 100 miles an hour. Wow.
Mike Malloy.
Hope you got your things together.
Hope you 21 past the hour. Let's take some phone calls here. If you'd like to call in, number is 877-996-2556. Kathy will open up the phones. Personhood from the moment of fertilization. Wow. Oh, well. It's, one of the questions raised, what does it mean for property or inheritance law? What happens when you're trying to make districts for voting and you have to consider fertilized eggs as legal persons? Yeah. So far, Mississippi is the only state with a personhood measure on the ballot this year, but CNN reported that similar initiatives are being planned in Florida, Montana, and Ohio. And that'll be, of course, the 2012 ballot. That will get all the right-wing crazy religious nutbags out.
Yeah, I'm going to vote. I'm going to stop that abortion. Them goddamn women think they can get job, boom, bam, bam.
Crazy, 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 crazy time. Yeah. Now, as far as... I wanted to bring this up. Bush sat down with USA Today last week to discuss the 10th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks and his role, Bush's role in shaping U.S. policy in their aftermath. And during that interview, according to Think Progress, Bush decided to take the opportunity to put himself, to pat himself on the back for the capture of Osama bin Laden. And, or not his capture, but for his death. Bush said the events that led to the death of bin Laden began during his administration. He said, quote, "The work that was done by intelligence communities during my presidency was part of putting together the puzzle that enabled us to see the full picture of how bin Laden was communicating and eventually where he was hiding. It began the day after 9/11, which is a filthy lie. Bush is nothing but a filthy goddamn liar." Now, remember when Bush said in 2002, quote, "I don't know where bin Laden is. I have no idea and really don't care. It's not that important. It's not our priority." He said that March 13th, 2002, on April 8th, 2002. When asked about bin Laden's whereabouts, he said, quote, "I am truly not that concerned about him." Bush wouldn't know bin Laden from a cheese sandwich. He had no idea who the guy was, except for the fact that his family and the bin Laden family had been business partners for decades. That's all Bush knew or needed to know. "Yeah, we do all together." "Who? Osama bin Laden? Never heard of him. Is he one of them? You know, that family's got about 80 sons. I don't know. You know, those Arabs." Disgusting. Absolutely. Alano is in Philadelphia listening on Sirius. Alano, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Mike.
Hi.
Tonight I wanted to either get some entertainment, so I was thinking about the football game or the Republican circus, debate. So I watched the Republican debate.
Oh, God, did you?
And, well, Mike, let me just say something. This group of individuals, these individuals had absolutely nothing to offer.
Nothing, I know, yeah.
And it was absolutely a circus, I was totally entertained.
Well, I was watching it during the breaks on the program here, and I would be entertained too, except for the fact that that these people are hell bent on destroying this country, and your involvement in this country, my involvement, our families, our futures, if you have kids or nieces, nephews, grandkids, whatever you have, all of it. That's what removes it to me from the realm of being funny. Although I agree with you, it is. It's hysterically funny. It's just also massively deadly.
Mike, I agree with you 100%. And when I texted my friend, Perry was packing, he said, yes, he was packing a Derringer.
Oh, really? Well, you
Mike,
know,
let me just,
yeah, you know, Wolf Blitzer, you can't trust him. You know, Wolf Blitzer's Jewish. I'm sure Perry was aware of that. That's why he had the gun with him.
Mike, let me just leave you with not only keep a lip, but, Mike, above all, don't bogart it.
Okay. I got you, Lano. Thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in. We'll be right back.
The Mike Malloy Show. Talk radio matters here.
25 before the hour. Quick email here from Australia. Paz in Oz. Who's listening? Regarding that comment about let him die in the debates tonight and people applauding, Paz writes, that's what gets me, Mike, about let him die Americans. By the way, did Jesus have health insurance? Like, what do they think the state is for? Why do they even vote for a political system if they don't want any degree of support and care from the state? Is this not why a left-leaning political party was formed, to represent the interests and welfare of those who had no wealth or power or too sick to care for themselves, etc.? But the right-leaning party was there to protect the interests of the landlords and the crown and empire. These mindless let-him-die hysterical peace haters have become the fascists, which is certainly here, fascism, just not fully charged. They constantly advocate that we fight against because of the civil rights, etc., denied by these states we go to war against. A little garbled there, Paz. I live here in Melbourne, Australia, and really there is not much difference in our outlook on the world. Like your general American outlook, most of us here are racist, God-fearing warmongers, no clue about Aboriginal injustice, etc., etc., and think we're the greatest nation on earth as we continue to destroy its environment with deforestation and poison, etc. When it comes to looking after one's neighbor, sure, we have our local neighborhood shootouts and drive-bys, even though we have total gun bans here. But the thought of people yelling in unison, let him die, because the selfish bastard didn't have insurance, would create such a stir here that you there in the United States would feel the shockwaves of disgust. I personally have no private health insurance, but we'll get around to it soon, because I'm beginning to feel some part of me beginning to break down, and I want to be sure I get the best care I cannot afford to pay for when I need it. Last week I had serious abdominal pain, was immediately seen by my local GP, and she sent me off the local shopping complex to a medical lab to get some x-rays, and so on and so forth. All this within a few hours of my thinking I better go see a doctor. And no expenses to me personally, except for what my taxes pay for. I was always very critical of our state and government, whether it be right or left. Not too much difference anymore, particularly when we blindly join you guys and the UK Queen in going to war for lies and profits. Or let's save Christianity from the evil Muslim. But I must say our welfare system, although it could be much better, like Cuba's, is something I am very glad exists. We do miss free education and other subsidized social services, but like the USA, we need all the money we can get and pour into our wars, etc. And we must continue to allow our lords and masters to become wealthier by way of paying minimal or no taxes, such as the mining industry. Anyway, thanks for the rant, Mike. Hope you get my point. America is becoming scarier every day. Once had a desire to come there, but now, well, let's see how Madam Liberty holds out. Take care. Cheers, mate. Paz in Oz. From down under. Back to... not down under. Mike is in Chicago listening on Sirius. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Mike. Long time no talk. I hope everything's well.
Yeah. Going fine. Missed your comments, Mike.
You know what? What's so appalling about that whole thing with the let him die is, oh, every one of those tools on stage, they're supposed to be super Christy.
Yeah.
That's the kicker of it.
Oh, I know.
None of them even said anything in retort to it at all.
I know.
Go ahead. I was literally watching it on my TiVo, and I had to pause it and go into the other room and get something to drink and just think about what I just saw. It was that disturbing.
Right. It was disturbing to me, too. I mean, just unbelievable. And when those voices said, let him die, there was not a reaction from the rest of the audience who didn't say that, a reaction like, hey, no, come on, man, hey, no.
No, there was laughing in the background.
Laughing, and then silence.
And then, you know, and the worst thing, which I don't understand, I have a friend who just came in from Germany. She lives in the Black Forest, and she's been watching our politics for maybe a month, and she said, why is it so hard for people in this country to see that the Republicans are for the corporations and the Democrats are for the people? And I'm like, why is it you've been in the country a month and you can see that?
Contrast.
Yeah, right, exactly. And, you know, and as far as Texas goes, I just visited Houston, and besides every vehicle being a pickup, I saw a bumper sticker that said Obama's right on target, and there's a crosshair over his face.
Yeah.
Now, you tell me any state or city in the world where you would drive around with that and not and actually have a sense of pride to have that on your bumper sticker.
Right.
It's just, have I mentioned how much I hate these people?
You just did, and I appreciate it. Okay.
Thanks, Mike. It was good talking to you again.
All right, take care. Stay in touch. This hour is sponsored by Alice at Heel and Hollers down there in Arkansas. Why is Arkansas spelled as though it were pronounced Arkansas? I've never been able to figure it out ever since I was a kid. Heel and Hollers in Arkansas. Alice's message, she supports the postal system because they have delivered all of her packages for over 10 years flawlessly. She writes, I cannot imagine my life or my business without my local post office. And if you don't know what she's talking about, those packages, oh my God, go to healandhollers.com. Just go to my website, myfamily.com, and click on her ad there, her logo. What do you call that? Banner? I guess a banner. Click on it. She's got some stuff that is just phenomenal. Oh, one thing, Alice, when are you going to start selling? I want some of that. We had the Yellow Daisy Festival here in Stone Mountain, Georgia. The mountain, not the little village over there. So we came down to it, Stone Mountain, Georgia, where the Klan was put back together in the 1940s up on top of Stone Mountain. And the irony now is that the Stone Mountain area now is pretty much 50-50 black and white. But we went to the Stone Mountain Festival, the Yellow Daisy Festival it's called, and ran into somebody there who was from Arkansas, and she had all these body lotions like patchouli, not lotion, but oils, patchouli or musk or what have you. And I had to buy some patchouli because I love patchouli. But I'm just wondering, you know, when I did that, I said, Kathy, why doesn't Heel and Holler sell this? So maybe Alice maybe Alice will hear this and decide to do it.
I'm sure Alice has some patchouli somewhere. But Alice, if you're listening, and I hope you are, you need to make yourself known at the Yellow Daisy Festival. You would be a hit because there are not nearly enough
natural vendors who
are selling their herbs and spices for the body.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And hers are the best. So Alice's are the best. If you haven't tried them, again, the hemp oil and the lemon hemp cream, it has saved my skin. It's amazing.
Alice at Heel and Hollers, our sponsor this hour, in case you couldn't figure that out. Right. Fred is in Concord, New Hampshire. Hello, Fred.
Hi, Mike. I listen to your show as often as I can.
Thank you.
I'm just entering my house right now for my listening to you. I just want to say I'm 54 years old. I've participated in all the elections since I could vote. And I honestly feel like I'm in 1938 Germany.
Yeah.
I have never seen such an abrupt change. After 9/11, people here have basically turned cruel, uncaring. It's like, I've got mine, screw everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And it's apparent, I mean, just how they said, let them die. It's this mindset has done a complete shift, and it's getting worse. And we are going to elect Perry. And if we don't elect him, the election will be stolen because Citizens United has basically done away with democracy. And honestly, I feel like going to the White House and with pitchforks, and we should have a revolution, but everybody's so fat, lazy, doesn't even care. The apathy in this country, coupled with the cruelty, is unbelievable. I'm looking to get my citizenship to go, not that it's going to be any better, but back to Italy, you know, and get my dual citizenship, because what's going on in this country, I just can't stomach anymore.
I know.
I really can't.
I know. I hear you. Fred, thanks. I appreciate what you had to say. I don't know what to do about it, you know. I really don't. I mean, to not be aware of what is going on, and it's moving geometrically towards a real fascism, real corporatism. And I'm not talking about the kind with the death camps or the concentration camps. Although once fascism gets its teeth into a country, there's no telling what could happen. I mean, we've had two presidents now back to back who use targeted assassinations, who have no problem sending drone missiles into crowds of people in order to kill one. And if they take out 20, well, that's collateral damage. But we're just getting so close to this, so close to it. It's, I don't know what to do. So bad that I fell out of bed. There was a gas strike, oil strike, lorry strike, a bed strike. Gotta be a superman to survive. Gas bills, rent bills, tax bills, phone bills. I'm such a wreck, but I'm staying alive. Hey girl, we gotta get out of this place. There's gotta be something better than this. I need you, but I hate to see you this way. If I was Superman.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. And once again, this hour is brought to you by Alice at Heal and Hollers. Check it out on my website, MikeMalloy.com. Her message, Heal and Hollers supports the postal system. Because they have delivered all of our packages for over 10 years flawlessly, I cannot imagine my life in business without my local post office. And you know what she's referring to. Chuck is in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hello, Chuck.
Hey, Mike. How you doing, guys?
I'm all right. How are you?
All right. I wanted to talk to you about something I've been thinking about. I feel like we've let the genie out of the bottle because we've spent the last 30 years letting corporations merge and get bigger and bigger and get away with all the things that they've gotten away with and let them grow to the size of nation states. We've got a situation that we can't reverse. To me, it literally would take the cooperation of every working man on the face of the earth to put the genie back in the bottle.
Mm-hmm.
These corporations have the power to work together to destroy economies, large economies like ours.
Mm-hmm.
That's how powerful they are. And they don't have borders. So that a corporation can have a factory in China, they can have an office in Bahrain.
Right, right.
And the people who run these corporations, the stockholders and the CEOs and so forth, can live anywhere on the face of the earth. Their money can be sitting in a Swiss bank or a Cayman Islands bank or any one of a couple of dozen different nations on the face of the earth that will hide their money for them. It's a contagion. It's literally a blood-sucking contagion that is taking the life out of life on Earth.
Yeah, that's true.
Environmental life or human life or whatever you want to talk about.
Yeah, I know. And it seems like there is no way. I can't think of a way to stop what is happening. It would require the people in that top 1% who are committing this chaos and mayhem and destruction, it would require them to stop and take a deep breath and take a look at what they're doing and have a change of heart and say, wait a second, we have billions, we have trillions of dollars. What are we doing here? I wish they understood that they are mortal. They're going to die, too, and there ain't no heaven going to rescue them or wherever the hell they think they're going to go. I would imagine a lot of these people really do believe that somehow they're immortal or they can buy their way out of death, and it's not going to happen. They have the same limited amount of time in this conscious realm as anyone else. And I just don't get this. I don't understand why there cannot be, apparently, a change of heart. I know that's what it's going to take, but ha-ha-ha, as far as that happening. Thanks, Chuck. Jeremy's in Burlington, Vermont. Hello, Jeremy.
Hey, Mike.
Hey.
Hey. I called tonight because I wanted to call about the horror story. We live every year of 9/11. And I think every time we all see it, we just get madder and madder because we know that, at the very least, they let it happen. If not planned for it to happen altogether.
Mm-hmm.
And thus, we got 5,000 of our Americans killed in Iraq. I mean, I sent that email earlier about what happens in Iraq.
Yeah, right.
It's still happening there. Mm-hmm. It hasn't ended. And then we sent them to Afghanistan. Or no, I'm sorry, it was reversed. Afghanistan, then Iraq.
Right.
And we know there is no evidence of anything that Saddam ever did. In fact, we know he hated Osama bin Laden. People like him.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And yet we sent 5,000 American troops to their death and as many as a million Iraqis to their deaths because whatever reason we felt we needed to do it, or yeah, the corporate felt they needed to do it. And it just seems like they just play it over and over again and then they dramatize the 10 years. Yes, I get it. 3,000 Americans died. That's very sad and we all know that. But they do this time and time again to drum up the drums for war.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, if you listen closely, you don't even listen closely, you can hear the drums for Iran, Pakistan, you can hear it. They want it.
I know.
Just when's it going to end? That's what I want to know, honestly. When's it going to end?
I don't know. That's a question that I've had, it seems like, for such a long time. And apparently there is no, I don't know, apparently there is no end to it. It's like the power is just determined that all of us are just going to die. You know, that we're just going to, I don't know. I don't even know how to phrase it anymore. I don't know how to say the words.
I definitely hear you there.
Yeah.
That's basically all I had to say tonight. I'm just sick of it, basically.
I hear you loud and clear, Jeremy. Thanks for checking in. Yeah, it was, I mean, I feel a lot of regret, empathetic regret for the people who lost family and friends. I mean, as much as I can. I've lost family and friends to death, violent and or not. You know, some of it just old age, disease, a couple of violent deaths, some of it drug-related. So I know the grief, the sense of loss that you have. And, you know, the part of the ceremonial aspects of yesterday, that the parts that were focused on the personal, private grief of those people, I have great respect for. The rest of it, it's just, I don't know, it's just unnerving. Stick around. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Beck. 7 past the hour. All right, it's been a while since I've talked about this particular topic, and it usually raises all kinds of craziness when I bring it up. Israel-Palestine, you know, that... Only this is the item that I want to bring to your attention is one that is not directly about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and how until that issue is settled and settled in a way that is as satisfactory as possible to all the sides concerned, there's not going to be any resolution to so many of the issues that are facing the United States on an international level. Now, I realize we have a tremendous amount of problems here at home, so why are we talking about Israel-Palestine? Because that issue could explode into, well, it could explode into a global conflict. A, B, the Christian crazy people in this country keep pushing and pushing and pushing for that kind of an explosion to occur. Because these dominionists, these Armageddonists, these rapture-ready crazy people desperately want to see blood flowing in the Middle East ankle-deep or waist-deep in order to have their sick philosophy, their sick superstitions fulfilled. Now, rational people know that those superstitions are never going to be fulfilled. They are what they are, superstitions. And but the bloodshed will come anyway. I mean, look over history. Look over the past 1,000 years. Look over the past 1,500 years. You know, come on. Come on. Come on. Part of the issue of the volatility of that area has now been... or let me rephrase it. The volatility has been exacerbated because of what's going on between Israel and Turkey. As you remember, the Israelis attacked a Turkish-registered flotilla boat that was taking non-threatening goods to Gaza last year. Was it last year? Was it that long ago? Or was it earlier this year? And I think 6 or 7 people of Turkish nationality were killed. The Turks have withdrawn their ambassador to Israel. There is a real saber rattling going on right now. Israel is once again finding itself. It had all these years with Egypt, the dictatorship in Egypt as a forced ally, with the Kingdom of Jordan as a forced ally, with the Turks doing business with Israel. All these possibilities existed for the Netanyahu or the other Likudniks to find a solution, to stop building settlements in territory that was not theirs, to come to a peace table someplace under conditions that were not 100% Israel's. Why does this matter to us? Well, I've already said it could explode into a kind of chaos that right now is pretty unimaginable. We have been involved in a couple of wars here that huge segments of the global population see as religious wars. Judeo-Christianity trying to snuff out Islam. And it doesn't matter what we think. It's what the rest of the world thinks about these issues. And the failure of president after president, prime minister after prime minister, Palestinian authority after Palestinian authority, the failure to find a solution just continues to make the situation even more volatile. And unless something is done, there is an explosion coming that is, it scares me to even think about. The Palestinian Authority is going to approach the United Nations seeking a UN mandate for statehood, just like the Israelis did back in 1948. Now, all of a sudden, for the Palestinians to do this, oh, it's horrible. Everybody from the New York Times to the Jerusalem Post to just even Haaretz is concerned about it. But it's going to happen. The Palestinians have waited for 70 years, 60 years. They are not going to wait anymore. They don't have the strength to attack an occupier. So they're going to the UN. And if the UN sanctions, not sanctions, but acknowledges or recognizes a Palestinian state or observer status for the Palestinians, if not a full-blown state, then it's going to put pressure that I don't know if the whole House of Cards can stand it. Now, what does all that have to do with the topic I want to bring up right now? Well, it's kind of disgusting, and it is more a little bit horrifying. An exhibit of children's art from Gaza brought back to the United States was scheduled to go public on September 24th at the Oakland Museum of Children's Art. What's the date today? The 12th? Scheduled to go on exhibit in just under 2 weeks. The Middle East Children's Alliance, MECA, M-E-C-A, the Middle East Children's Alliance, a partner in staging this exhibit, has let some of the press know that the museum's board has decided to cancel the exhibit. The press release here from the Middle East Children's Alliance, MECA, I want to share it with you. The Museum of Children's Art in Oakland, MOCHA, M-O-C-H-A, has decided to cancel an exhibit of art by Palestinian children in the Gaza Strip. The Middle East Children's Alliance, MECA, which was partnered with MOCHA to present the exhibit, was informed of the decision by the museum's board president last Thursday, September 8th. For several months, MECA, the Middle East Children's Alliance, and the museum had been working together on the exhibit, which is titled A Child's View of Gaza. MECA has learned that there was a concerted effort by pro-Israel organizations in the San Francisco Bay Area to pressure the museum to reverse its decision to display Palestinian children's art. Barbara Lubin, the executive director of MECA, the Middle East Children's, the Museum of Children's, Middle East Children's Alliance. Barbara Lubin, the executive director of MECA, expressed her dismay that the museum decided to censor this exhibit in contradiction to the museum's mission, quote, to ensure that the arts are a fundamental part of the lives of all children, end quote. Barbara Lubin said, quote, we understand all too well the enormous pressure that the museum came under, but who wins? The museum doesn't win. MECA doesn't win. The people of the Bay Area don't win. Our basic constitutional freedom of speech loses. The children in Gaza lose. She added, quote, the only winners are those who spend millions of dollars censoring any criticism of Israel and silencing the voices of children who live every day under military siege and occupation, end quote. I mean, this is vile. This is the kind of thing that the Germans did to the Jews in Germany, or the Nazis did, I should say, prior to the beginning of the concentration camps and the extermination of the Jews. Which is not to declare that there are going to be death camps built in Israel and the Palestinians will be hauled to those death camps. I'm just saying that this kind of dehumanization that has been going on now for decades, but this, children's art from Gaza. More on this when we come back. City.
Oh, and I remember misinformation follows like a plague. If the plans were changed, oh, 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 if the plans were changed, you can beat us with wires, you can beat us with chains, you can run out your rules, but you know you can't outrun.
Defining Anger Management. Back to Mike Malloy.
Past the hour in San Francisco, of all places, San Francisco Bay Area, the Oakland Museum of Children's Art, has decided to cancel Middle East Children's Alliance exhibit of artwork from kids in Gaza. This as a result of pressure, according to the organizers of this exhibit, pressure on the museum by people who are so narrow-minded and ultimately destructive that they would deny even Palestinian children's art to be displayed because their support for Israel is so unshakable. Enormous pressure, according to Barbara Lubin, the executive director of the Middle East Children's Alliance, MECA. Anyway, the press release goes on. Unfortunately, this disturbing incident is just one example of many across the nation in which certain groups have successfully silenced the Palestinian perspective, which includes artistic expression. In fact, some organizations have even earmarked funds for precisely those efforts to silence anything regarding the Palestinian perspective. Have you? I'm sure you've noticed that. Last year, this press release goes on, regrettably, the Jewish Federation of North America and the Jewish Council for Public Affairs launched a $6 million initiative to effectively silence Palestinian voices, even in, quote, cultural institutions, end quote. Now, the exhibit that we're talking about here, the Museum of Children's Art in Oakland, MOCA, that has been canceled. It was a free exhibit co-sponsored by nearly 20 local organizations in the Bay Area. Scheduled to open September 24th, featured special activities for children and families, including a cartooning workshop and poetry readings. Canceled. Gaza, which has a population of 1.6 million, has been under siege since Israel imposed a blockade against it 5 years ago. The UN and many human rights organizations across the world have condemned the blockade as an inhumane and cruel form of collective punishment, which, like so many of the violations committed by the Bush administration, the Bush crime family, is in violation not only of the UN Charter, but a violation of Geneva Conventions that require occupying countries to make sure that the citizens of the country that it is occupying or they are occupying does not suffer specifically these kinds of deprivations or denials. But the United States and Israel are two countries that raise the middle finger to UN resolutions or to international law, to the Geneva Conventions, to the Nuremberg war crimes decisions, the United States and Israel. Oh, yeah, China. Okay, Cambodia. But for the most part, those events are internal. What the United States and Israel does as occupying countries is in violation of so much law as to render both countries outlaw nations in the eyes of most of the world. That's just how it's seen. And that's part of the reason that we have terror alerts. That's part of the reason that the attack occurred on this country 10 years ago. That's part of the reason thousands of American soldiers have died. That's part of the reason why tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of Afghans, Pakistanis, Iraqis, Palestinians, and Israelis have died. All because of this. All because the United States and Israel lives a lie and tries to pretend like the rest of the world isn't aware of these lies, these monstrous lies. Well, here we are. Now a children's exhibit in the Bay Area. Closed. The executive director of the Middle East Children's Alliance, MECA, Ziad Abbas said, quote, even while the children in Gaza are living under Israeli policies that deprive them of every basic necessity, even so, they managed through art to express their realities and hopes. The kids did. It's really very sad that there are people in the United States silencing them and shredding their dreams. Unquote. Ziad Abbas, Mika's executive or associate director. Mika's disappointed, of course, in the museum's decision, the press release says, to deny Bay Area residents the opportunity to view Palestinian art. Barbara Lubin, the executive director of Mika, said, quote, we made a promise to these children that their art will be shown, and we are going to keep that promise. End quote. Before the hour. See how much hate mail the story of the youngsters from Gaza will generate this program. Just never stops, does it? Huh? You would think that... oh, never mind. What the hell's the point? Last week we were talking about how farmers, ranchers, grove owners are really suffering because of the laws passed restricting migrant labor, which is putting it mildly. The Obama administration has deported more undocumented workers than, I don't know, any president ever in the history of the entire galaxy, I guess, over a million. And yet the swine in the Republican Party continue to pretend as though Obama is just opening the floodgates for undocumented workers to come to this country. Farmers and growers understand how important workers are, documented or not. It's very simple. You plant a crop, whether it's apples or peanuts, and if you have no labor to harvest the crop, what's going to happen? Well, that's right. It's just going to rot. And what's going to happen to you, the farmer or the grower? Well, if you have tons and tons and tons of money in the bank, you'll be able to survive it and contribute more money to Republican candidates for office. Or if you're not flush with money, then you can go bankrupt. You could lose your property. You could question once again when you go to church on Wednesday night why in the hell you ever vote Republican. But you'll vote Republican again anyway because you are a dumbass. And it is your nature to vote against your own best interests. We talked about this last week. Well, now a leading Republican lawmaker has proposed creating a program, according to the New York Times, to bring 500,000 foreign migrant farm workers to the U.S. each year. What? A Republican is suggesting 500,000 foreign migrant farm workers be what? Bussed in, trucked in, flew in, trained in? That's what he's suggesting. He is responding to the outcry this summer from American farmers and growers who said shortages of labor were imperiling their crops. Here in Georgia, stuff was rotting in the fields. Berry farmers, peanut farmers, it's rotting. Anyway, the lawmaker is good old Lamar Smith of Texas. Yes, indeed. Chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, Lamar Smith. Who has as much business being in the House of Representatives as some hog on a farm up there in North Carolina. I mean, there he is, Representative Lamar Smith, chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. He's the one who would lead the investigation as to whether or not there are grounds to impeach Obama. That's him, Lamar Smith. He has introduced what he calls his farm guest worker bill last Wednesday. And he held a hearing on it in the House last Thursday. Now, unless you watch C-SPAN, you wouldn't know anything about this, right? He is proposing, Lamar Smith, Representative Lamar Smith of Texas, proposing a thorough overhaul of the existing guest worker program for agriculture, known as H-2A, which is avoided by most growers and farmers as being too bureaucratic and costly for the fast-changing labor needs that people who grow or plant need. So Lamar has got an idea. You see, farmers have turned to some 1.1 million illegal immigrants, estimated right now to be working in agriculture, over a million. See, the farmers and the growers and the ranchers, they don't give a goddamn about the stuff. They plant. When it's time to harvest, they need workers. Documented, undocumented, legal, illegal, it doesn't make any difference. What they want are hands, bodies. It doesn't make any difference to some of these people if it's an 8-year-old or an 80-year-old. They don't give a damn. Just get this stuff out of the field or it's going to rot. They don't care. Lamar Smith offered his proposal after a bill he introduced in June designed to prevent, undocumented workers from gaining jobs in this country, generated a wave of resistance from farmers. See, he offered it in June. Well, damn, this will keep those Mexicans out. And the farmers didn't like it. That bill would authorize all employers nationwide to use a federal electronic system known as E-Verify to confirm that new hires are legally authorized to work here. Now, it shouldn't be that way, should it? Huh? Part of this has to do with the craziness that was enacted, all just dozens, hundreds of laws enacted in this country after September 11, 2001, which was the whole idea behind the engineering of that attack. Oh, God, he's going to talk about 9/11 was planned by the Bushies? I'm not saying that. I'm saying that the Bush crime family either did that or was so ignorant and so stupid and so incompetent that they allowed it to happen. But it doesn't make any difference. They had laws ready to go. And part of these laws designated people that came into this country to work on farms and in orchards as potential terrorists. So the E-Verify system, which farmers say, that's not our job. Our job is not to do that. Our job is to plant, grow, and then harvest. That's our job. We're not in the business of deciding who's here legally or illegally, depending on who's in power in Washington, depending on what the political climate is, depending on who's running for what office. We don't care. Our job is to plant, grow, and harvest. Oh, it used to be that simpler, didn't it, boys? Not anymore. So, growers, people involved in agriculture, farmers, including, surprise, surprise, many Republicans balked at this, saying they would not support this E-Verify crap unless Congress provided a supply of legal immigrants for farms. Provided a supply of legal immigrants for farms. So now Lamar Smith, Representative Lamar Smith, Texas Chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, is trying to do just that. Wants to supply a flow of legal immigrants. Documented workers. Now, this has been going on all across the country, in the South and the Southwest, in the Northwest and the Northeast. No workers. And maybe you've noticed it in your neighborhood. Have you noticed out in front of your local Home Depot, your local Lowe's? You notice all of a sudden all those brown-skinned Mexican or Guatemalan or Honduran or whatever country they're from in Central America, all those workers, they were standing, sitting there, waiting, waiting, waiting for jobs. All of a sudden, their numbers have been reduced, if not to zero, certainly by half, 70, 80%. Have you noticed that? Gone. Because coming up here looking for a job meant coming up here looking to go to prison or being deported or being held in detention endlessly. How did this work before? Well, that's right. Well, before NAFTA, before Clinton and Bush destroyed the worker relationship between the United States and Mexico, before it was destroyed, you had migrant workers who just came to this country, harvested, went home. Came back, harvested, went home. But then Clinton with his NAFTA, Clinton and Bush won with NAFTA, and then Cheney and Bush with their terrorism laws, all of a sudden, look what happened. Look what's happened. Now nobody wins. Not the farmer, not the grower, not the rancher, not the undocumented worker, not the documented worker, not the local sheriffs, not the local jails. All of a sudden, local sheriffs, local cops are being told, well, now you've got to be an immigration enforcement officer. You can't just go after the bad guys who might be ready to commit rape, murder, pillage, loot, arson. No, now you've got to check the papers of people who might be here because they're looking for a job. Good God.
From your ground, pick the grapes from your vines to set on your table your light sparkling. It's green pastures of plenty from dry desert ground. From the Grand Coulee Dam, where the waters run down. Every state in this union, us migrants, has been. And we'll work in this fight.
The thought keeps popping up. If George W. Bush had not given the wealthy the tax cuts that he did, if he had not ordered two unfunded wars, if he had not signed into law the unfunded Medicare prescription drug program, which was really designed to end Medicare, if he had not done any of that, you know what? We would have zero debt right now. Zero debt. Zero debt. And balanced budgets into the foreseeable future. So what the hell are Republican thugs talking about? What are these swine talking about? I'll give you something to think about here. This certainly has me thinking. I mean, I don't know what to make of it. I really don't. All of a sudden, there has been just a little dribble drabble of reports leaking out. Here's one. Last month, the former White House counterterrorism czar, remember Richard Clark? He made headlines in the alternative press when he revealed that the CIA failed to pass on information that it knew about two of the alleged 9/11 hijackers living in the United States for over a year before the attacks. And it turns out that that failure didn't merely involve a couple of CIA analysts who didn't understand the importance of the information, but instead it went all the way up to former CIA Director George Tenet. Whoops, what does this mean? According to BoilingFrogsPost.com, the claim that the CIA knowingly and that the director of the CIA knowingly and purposely blocked the White House counterterrorism czar and high-level FBI officials from learning about known al-Qaeda agents living in the U.S. is, to say the least, profound in its implications, given that any interpretation of this assertion would necessarily mean that George Tenet and other CIA officials who blocked this information actually helped the alleged CIA attackers and have now participated in a decade-long cover-up of their role. And then the question necessarily becomes, why did they do this? I mean, it pretty much what Colleen Raleigh has reported, what now Richard Clark, the former counterterrorism head, the charges that are being made here, and see, the mainstream media apparently has been instructed not to touch these stories. Oh, that's a bunch of that 9/11 conspiratorial crap. Leave that alone. That's a career killer. So Richard Clark is saying that George Tenet, all the way up to the head of the CIA, knew that two of ultimately the alleged hijackers were living in this country. Now, keep in mind, why do we start bombing Afghanistan? Because that's where these terrorists had been trained. But they were trained in Fort Lauderdale. They were trained in Milwaukee. They were trained in Fort Worth. Why didn't Bush order the bombing of Florida? Why didn't he order an assault by Marines on the state of Wisconsin? You see all the garbage here. Do you wonder why 9/11 doubters, let's call them doubters, I'm in that category, 9/11 doubters, why we doubt the official story? I mean, at what point do you want to let it go and just say, oh, for Christ's sake, that was then, this is now? Are you serious? You want to let this story go? I don't think you do. Bob Alexander, who sent me the link to BoilingFrogsPost.com, said, I've always thought that when whoever did this felt threatened by any exposure, they'd trot out the nincompoop card. George W. Bush was president. Who wouldn't deep down believe that the Bushes were massively incompetent? Even diehard Republicans knew their guy was an idiot. They never admitted it, but they knew. So, what does that mean? Could it be that George W. Bush was the perfect patsy? the Lee Harvey Oswald of this? Could it be? Remember, Bush is on record blowing off the Bin Laden determined to strike in the U.S. memo. Remember that? So what if, I'm just tossing out, what if George W. Bush didn't have a clue? How many times did Dick Cheney make trips out to CIA headquarters? Bush never knew. Is it possible? Of course it is. Someone as incompetent and stupid as George W. Bush linked up with somebody as diabolical and classically evil as Dick Cheney? OMG, OMFG. I mean, think about it. Just, you know, when you drift off to sleep tonight, just think about it. What if George W. Bush was the patsy? Oh, my. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.